Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Saturdays were made for this. The biggest names and the biggest games. Right here.
Woo! For King G, where comfort is king.
1, 2, 3, 4! Hey, how let's go!
Triple M rocks the NRL.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
And it's so nice to be with you heading towards a 3 o'clock kickoff. The Dragons taking on the Bulldogs from Wynn Stadium in Wollongong. Peter Sterling will join us at 2 o'clock. Go through to that call. Nathan Brown is with us. Emma Lawrence, of course. Ryan Girdler, my name is Tony Squires. Let's look at that Tyre Power scoreboard. The Raiders on Thursday night, 24-20 winners over the Roosters. The Storm, far too good for the Titans, 42-6. And, of course, last night it was the Tigers, 48-0 over the Broncos. And we are fortunate enough to be joined right now by Michael Maguire, the coach of the Tigers. Madge, g'day.
G'day, Tony. How are you?
Very well. You must be feeling good this morning. A terrific performance from your mob.
Yeah, it's always nice to wake up with a win, and especially being able to have the zero on the scoreline. So it's always a pleasing piece.
Last night we were watching, and I was listening to Kevy Walters as he was commentating on Billy going round. Now, he scored that try. He described him as a champion celebrator. did that continue in the dressing room?
It was great to see young Billy get out there, and it's nice to see a dad being able to enjoy his son doing the things he's doing. So I thought it was a good night for Bill, but I thought, you know, the team themselves played very well together, and yeah, that was a real pleasing piece.
Madge Brownie, mate.
Hey, Brownie.
How are you, pal? All right?
Good, mate. Good.
That's all right. You've made a couple of big calls, Madge, with obviously some players of, you know, probably more your higher profile ones with both Benji and Luke Brooks. But you must be wrapped with the response you got from the whole group after both those decisions.
Yeah, Brownie. I think one thing I'm really pleased with is how the team themselves are driving what's going on in the organisation. You know, I obviously can set certain things that we want to achieve, but it's the buy-in of the group that is the pleasing piece. And, you know, everyone understands the standards that they're setting, that, you know, we uphold. And, you know, when they're always big decisions when you're, you know, pushing someone like Benji or Luke Brooks out, but the players themselves are the ones that are setting the expectations of what the group's all about. So, you know, that's all we're doing, is that we're living the values and the standards of what we're building at the club. And, you know, we need to make sure that we do that consistently now. You know, obviously, we've had some good performances throughout the season, but we've had some ones where we look at and we went, that's just not the way the club, or not the direction where the club's heading. So, you know, you've got to make those decisions to make change, and I think the change has come from within the players.
And on Benji, imagine, I remember talking to him last year before one of our games, having a bit of a chat to him, and I was talking to him about, to me, he looks a better team player now, as far as he looks like the game is much easier for him. He does the simple plays far better than where years ago, obviously, he had all the flash type of different plays he could do. But I remember watching lots of his footy last year, and I just feel he actually sees the game for what it actually is and actually plays the simple plays better. Do you agree with that? Or?
Oh, definitely, mate. I think, you know, maturity in your game and all those sorts of things come. But I guess everyone's always had an expectation about Benji being able to come up with something. So you tend to live that a little bit. So I think what Benji's really done now is that he's utilising and influencing the team for the betterment of what makes the game. And, you know, Benji's being able to do that. And, look, you know, I felt probably when I had to talk to Benji about sitting out that he was going away from a little bit of that in his game, and, you know, being able to just concentrate on what he needs to do for the team. And I think that's been a simple message to him that I've been talking about since I've been at the club. And, you know, we all know how capable Benji is, and he showed that last night. But it's being able to be in the right frame of mind every single time you play to be able to achieve that. So I do agree with you there, Brownie.
Hey, Madge, I know it takes, you know, it's everyone. It's the 17 players and everyone behind the scenes to put a performance together and get a result like you did last night against the Bronx. But can I ask you a question, all that aside? Did you have any indication that Harry Grant was going to have the sort of impact on your season that he's actually having when you went into this loan deal at the start of the year?
Look, I knew Harry was a very capable player, but I never would have thought that, you know, he's being able to influence the way he has. Look, you know, I'd seen probably 4 or 5 games of Harry in Queensland Cup, and look, he's doing what he, in Queensland Cup, he's doing that now. So, but, you know, it's at a higher level. And look, I think the team around him's definitely helped him in that space as well. Gerds with the fact that, you know, he's a good kid. You know, he walked in, he put his head down and worked extremely hard. And we're probably very lucky that we had 3 weeks before we started the season, because Harry came in literally on our last game before everything stopped. So Harry walked into the change room that night. And then if I was able to sort of think about how I would have used Harry then, would have I put him in straight away or not? But what we were able to do was create some combinations through that sort of three-week warm-up period before we got back into the season. So that was real beneficial for us.
And it even shows how confident you are within the way that he plays, because, you know, you've been changing his spine around on a weekly basis. So building those combinations for him has also been difficult. Have you taken that into, obviously, consideration? Well, you have, when you've made those calls?
Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of training, and I do change combinations at training, and everyone probably says, you know, you've got to have the cohesion, but we are continually doing that at training all the time. So, you know, I'm always, you know, very open to my players about the expectations of what we have to live. So, you know, I like to have that change, and you can see by the rotations that we've had, people have just chimed in and done their roles and played their part for the team, and that's what we all expect from each other when we're building what we're doing.
Hey, Madge, it's Emma Lawrence. You had an old fella running around in the centres last night, Chrissy Lawrence. Did you have any doubts? He hadn't played in the centres in a long time, and I was saying before, I was a little bit worried last week watching him go back there. Did you have any doubts?
No, not really, Em. You know, he'd been filling in at training, and I guess for that brother of yours, he just keeps on turning up for us. And, you know, he loves the club, he loves what he's doing, and, you know, he doesn't shirk any training, and I just felt that, you know, with his experience too, being out on that edge, he makes some really good decisions defensively. And, you know, it's well known that I want to make sure that we become a very strong defensive team. So having players like that out on the field, you know, is very beneficial for us. And, you know, he brings a wealth of experience as well.
Talking to Tigers coach Michael Maguire. Madge, that can be a very collegiate thing, the coaching ranks. You know exactly what other coaches are going through. At any point, did you feel for the man who is in the coach's box near you?
I feel for all coaches. I've been there, Tony, and you know, it's an incredible ride what coaching gives you. It's got so many highs and, you know, some really tough periods throughout. But it's about, you know, knowing where you got to go, and that's basically what I'm concentrating on. And, you know, I don't like sort of talking about other people, because I've been in all those positions as a coach, and it's about, you know, what I can do now with this team. And, you know, I've got a real big belief in this group of players that I have, and I'm really enjoying their coaching because they're willing to push the boundaries of where they've been. So, you know, we've got to keep pushing that so we can keep striding forward.
All right, mate, thanks so much for talking to us, and thanks so much for getting everything out of Luciano Leilua that we didn't quite get out of him at the Dragons.
He's going well, Luch. Yeah. He's a good kid. He's doing really well.
He certainly is. That try from the goal line dropout was amazing. It was great to watch. Mate, thanks so much. Congratulations.
Thanks,
really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
And there he is, Michael Maguire. Still plenty to come. Speaking of Anthony Seibold, we are going to go into Queensland, and Ben Dobbin gives us his take next on Saturday Scrum.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Yes, we thank our friends at King G. We've got plenty to come, but I should warn the listeners in Brisbane that they will leave us in roughly 16 minutes.
Quick, get
to take
Dobbo
in
on.
The Brisbane Lions taking on GWS. So that's in about 15 minutes. We'll say goodbye to them. And yes, indeed, before then, we need to get the news from the great man himself, Ben Dobbin. Dobbo, g'day.
How are we, guys? Yeah.
How are you, Dobbo? Yeah. What's going on up north?
Every single week we seem to be having the same conversation. I think it's safe to say we could all say that I don't think Brisbane are going to make the eight this year. It's a sad statement.
I hope you haven't come on here to make that statement, Dobbo.
Look, it's been called this morning the worst team in the Broncos' history, and that's what the papers are saying today. And statistically, it is. And that's no mean feat. And for the proud club that Brisbane is, the questions are now being really asked, and rightly so. Why would the management of the Brisbane Broncos give a coach that's had 1 year's experience as a head coach a 5-year deal that is, and you can say there's performance clauses in it, there's all this other stuff, but it's ironclad at the moment. If Brisbane are going to move, they're going to have to make a payout. Look, the chairman's been talking. He's been very quiet. He won't go on record, Carl Morris, but they are moving towards, at the moment, having some very high-level discussions. And this is higher than the club. This is with News Limited. This is with the power brokers who have the club, and there's going to be reviews done. And when we know when reviews start, the drums start to beat as well. And I'm not sure what the answer is. I don't know if it's the right decision to sack a coach mid-term. Brownie, you've probably got a better insight from the coaching fraternity how difficult that is when there is that kind of pressure. But Brisbane need to make a change of some instance. They haven't got the cattle at the moment to make the change from a player's perspective. So they're going to have to do it, whether or not it's the football manager, whether or not it's the coach. But something's going to happen this week.
Hey, Dobbo, it's Emma. If they do make the decision to let Seibold go and they realise, okay, look, potentially we made the wrong decision, surely others have to be accountable. Who else goes? It can't just be Seibold.
Well, you've just got to look at it. I mean, the decision was made and the recommendations, and this is clear. Peter Nolan is the football manager. Paul White is the CEO. They made the recommendations to the board. Carl Morris is the chairman and the board, and Darren Lockie was on that committee as well. Darren Lockie is arguably, you know, a future immortal. I mean, is he caught up in the headlights? Some people have said, yes, he is. Some people said he's too close to it. Just because you're a club legend and he is an immortal and one of the greatest to ever play the game, does that entail that you're the best judge for selecting coaches and for selecting player talent? I mean, many a good player. And no disrespect, you ask Wally Lewis, he says, mate, you know, he's arguably the best there ever was, but he said he was a dreadful coach. And that doesn't necessarily, just because you're a great player, doesn't necessarily entail that you have the skill set moving forward. But there's going to have to be some hard decisions made. And Brisbane just can't keep on going like this. They face the Melbourne Storm next Friday night, and it could be anything. Now, look, the good news is obviously Corey Oates isn't gone for the season. It's only 3 weeks. And they are going to get, you know, Jake Turpin back, potentially Katoni Staggs and Matt Lodge. But the pressure that goes on those blokes having to deliver something every week, knowing that they're chasing their tail the whole time, it's not fair. I mean, the fact that Anthony Seibold put Pat Carrigan as captain last night when he had a bloke by the name of Darius Boyd there, I don't care. You don't throw a young bloke that's 30 games in and they can say, oh, it's part of his development, part of his growth. Crap. This bloke needs to literally just play football and not worry about anything else. Doesn't need to worry about leading a team at the moment. That's why you get experienced players and they're just not there at the moment.
Hey, Dobbo, I'm not into talking of coaches being someone that likes coaching and wants to coach still myself, but on the recruitment front, if you look at Fifita, who and how did all them other players get big upgrades before Fifita was signed, when, in my opinion, I don't think I've seen a player like him myself? What's the story there in your opinion?
Well, I mean, Brownie, you have to ask, and you're right. I mean, roster management is so crucial these days. And, you know, it's interesting. I said to Ricky Stewart, only myself the other day, I said to him, how did you get your side? And he said, mate, it's not the top string players. It's the players coming through that you've got to manage. And I think there's been so many deals done. I mean, you've got to remember, Matt Gillett retired, unfortunately, at the end of last year. They probably had him there. But they topped up. They had so many young fellas they topped up and let go. No, everybody's asking, how did it get to the point? But I'm not throwing rocks at any manager, I promise you. But, you know, Isaac Moses doesn't manage David Fifita. He manages other players. And at the moment, a lot of those players, they're still there. Now, for whatever reason, David Fifita's had a falling out with his manager. And the relationship between that manager and the club has been fractured in somewhat, because there's three parties. There's David and his family talking to the club. There's the manager that still thinks he's entitled. And there's also the club trying to talk to other managers as well, and other managers trying to talk on behalf of David. It's just become messy. Brisbane want to keep David Fifita. They've been trying for over 12 months. No two ways about it. It just hasn't been able to get done. The longer this goes on, though, I think that David Fifita will stay. I know a lot of people saying, oh, well, look, but I feel that David Fifita, and the little that I do know him, but the people around him who talk to me say that he feels that now that this is the time when they will come together, these young blokes, and try and make a right. And I don't see David Fifita, honestly, and I hope I'm right with this, leaving Brisbane. I don't see it happening.
Dobbo, the Courier Mail may well say, the worst team ever, but that can happen. Does that necessarily mean that you get rid of the coach? Is that what's going to happen? Will those same players next week, if Anthony Seibold isn't the coach, do they put in a better performance?
Oh, there's no guarantee in that, and there's absolutely no guarantee in that. And I don't think they'll sack Anthony Seibold this week. That's the honest truth. As much as the reviews and they're giving the lip service that they're looking through it, I actually think the payout, and because of the way the contract negotiation, it's delicate, and I don't know what benefit they get out of, in some ways doing that. I do know other clubs when they've had a coach that they haven't been happy with, and you can look at the Roosters' history till they got it right with Trent Robinson. When they had the wrong coach, the chairman pulled the trigger, got in another one till they found their right man, and they didn't prolong it. So if Brisbane and Carl Morris are serious about it, and they don't believe that, and if they don't believe Anthony Seibold's the right coach, or they believe that he needs an assistant around him or some help with him there, they need to pull it. Now, look, big injury toll, I know, but you can't use that as an excuse because other teams have got the exact same kind of injuries at this present moment. It's about attitude. That loss last night in the wet against a team, with no disrespect, who are going to be around that 8th, 7th, 6th in the competition, and to have 48 points put on them, that's just unacceptable in any club land. But if you're a Brisbane Broncos fan, it's even more unacceptable. They're everywhere you go at this today, and people ringing and talking about it, they've just never seen this before. And it's not just happened once. This has happened post-COVID three or four times now where they've copped absolute drubbings. And there's a question mark around the effort of the playing group.
And Dobbo, we know that Paul White is heading off, and there's been a lot of talk about Ben Eichen. Can you see Ben Eichen being there? I mean, what's the push like up there?
Ben Eichen would do a phenomenal job. Another bloke, Greg Swan, who's the CEO of the Brisbane Lions, he's been touted. There's even been talk of the Melbourne Storm CEO, Dave Donaghy, being talked and linked to Brisbane as well. All three of them, if that's it, would do an outstanding job. But I think the big thing with Brisbane, and I don't want to digress too much on this, but the Brisbane Broncos, after their final training session, before every single match, always had a barbecue. And old boys used to come and have a barbecue with him. The players sat around. The media all sat there. Now, post Wayne Bennett leaving, that barbecue has been scrapped. And it's amazing how something so small has been talked about so much from old boys and different people. Now, it's not about the free feed. It was just that's what the club built off the foundations. And unfortunately, at the moment, this club is a shadow of its former self in what it looks like. Now, do you go and get a bloke like Ben Eichen back in there who knows the fabric of what the Broncos fabric is? Sure, they've got to have the financial skill set, but you need someone in that job who absolutely 100% buys in to getting the Broncos back to what they are.
Yeah, indeed. All right. The thing is, if you can't be at the top of the competition, it's better be down where they are because you still make the front pages all the time. It's terrific. You're just a fan.
Well,
you've been talked about.
Well, I tell you what, their major sponsors are cheering at the moment. Yeah, they have never sold more cars.
Yeah. Dobbo, it's great to talk to you, buddy. We're going to go shortly, of course. The Brisbane listeners will also leave us for their footy. But stick around. This is the Saturday Scrum. Triple M rocks the footy. The Raiders, now despite their injuries, they had an amazing win over the Roosters, 24 points to 20. We'll get into that game in more detail a little bit later on, but there's just a moment of that. Different things and varying things obviously influence the game of footy. I think Ricky Stewart thought that Josh Papali, when he got clobbered by Angus Crichton, maybe accidentally, but with the penalty went against him, it had an effect. Have a listen to Ricky Stewart. This is Ricky right now. No, we can't hear you.
Whacked in the nose. I don't understand why we didn't get the penalty. But when he got whacked in the nose like that, I was pretty confident that we were going to go on and win this match because they poked the bear.
They poked the bear, Josh Papali being the bear. Of course, he went on, scored that terrific try and was very impressive.
Was tough, that try. There were lots of Roosters defenders in his way trying to stop him for that one.
Were there anybody that was the poke the bear?
You have one win and you start bagging the champs.
Or whatever. You lose one game of 3-5 and you've got attitude.
You're still talking about that.
Wow. Honestly. You're bitter and twisted, aren't you? Hang on to stuff. Did you have a poke the bear kind of guy in your day?
Well, yeah. Well, we obviously the Raiders back in the day had Big Mal out in the centres. And when I remember playing for the Steelers, that was the chat in the sheds before we went out onto Wynn Stadium. The first time I marked Mal, I couldn't agree with it more. And they all said, just leave him alone. Don't poke the bear. Don't make him angry. Don't sledge him. just hopefully he just stands out wide. And because Mount could do that, he could tear you apart if he was in the mood, or if he was just the ball didn't come his way and no one got in his face too much, he could just sort of, you know, hang out there and not create too much damage. So that was always the plan when marking or playing against Mal.
And, of course, if you poked the bear, you were the one who bore the brunt of it.
Yeah, I was the one with the red rag.
Was there anybody who was poking the bear for you?
You just knew. You just kept as far away as possible from Ian Roberts and Les Davison. You didn't want to cross paths with any of them blokes. And I wasn't the only one there. That was pretty much the whole competition.
What about Gordy Tallis, though, when you're playing in the same team? Did you kind of try to G him up?
Well, you didn't really have to try very hard. Gordy was pretty much every week he was there to play Gordy. And Gordy, if you didn't really know, Gordy actually liked violence. So he was actually...
What do you mean liked?
He's quite hopeful.
You shouldn't speak like that in the past.
If he wasn't on the field, like, if you live with him, and I was lucky because he loved me, Gordy, and I was no challenge, but if there was anyone bigger in the lounge room, he enjoyed it. Yeah, to be honest with you.
All right, we have plenty to come, including we'll talk to Ryan Pappenhausen. Sturlo joins us at 2 o'clock. Our Brisbane listeners know sadly they'll be listening to the Brisbane Lions taking on GWS. Stick around.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Great to have your company on a Saturday afternoon, 25 minutes till Sturlo arrives. And, of course, at 3 o'clock, it is the Dragons taking on the Bulldogs. Nathan Brown is with us, Ryan Girdler, Emma Lawrence. My name is Tony Squires, and it's time for Nathan Brown to take us right here.
The Coach's Corner with Nathan Brown.
Yes, it is the Dragons and the Bulldogs. There was some news in the today, a story, Brownie, about Dragons skipper Cam McGuinness.
Cam McGuinness and obviously Jack DeBellin.
Yep.
With Cam McGuinness dropping back into playing, I suppose, Jack DeBellin's favoured position. And Jack DeBellin being offered way more money than what he was getting paid whilst not playing.
Yeah.
Jack DeBellin, for me, if you're the greatest thing, in my opinion, from a not only a coach but a player's point of view, is to have players in your club that make other people better. And obviously, quite clearly, when Andrew Johns finished at Newcastle, we saw Newcastle fall away. And when Ricky Stewart was injured or left Canberra fell away. Brad Fittler retired from the Roosters. The Roosters had a flat period. Those blokes were such great playmakers. But for me, Jack DeBellin is far and away the best player at the Dragons. I know he's not playing. And what he does for the rest of the group has been there for all to see when he actually hasn't been playing. So unfortunately for the Dragons fans and Dragons coaches, I actually just got to see how good this bloke is whilst he's not there. And the Dragons had many of players playing State of Origin at the time, and they were all playing Origin when Jack DeBellin was playing, and now they don't have any Origin players playing. And I think it's down to Jack DeBellin. He's what an outstanding player. And as we've noticed, the Warriors, their recruitment guru, as he likes to call himself, Peter O'Sullivan, who's a good friend of mine and is the outstanding recruiter, the Warriors have identified what Jack DeBellin could bring to that club. And obviously Madge was interested at the time too, which now they may not be interested from what we heard earlier from Reedy. I'm not sure if they are or aren't, but yeah, the fact that he can make the rest of the forward pack do what they do, and then when he's not there, not play quite as well, just shows how good a player he actually is.
I even reckon, Brownie, to add to that, the way that the game's changed and we see the 13s now playing with the ball more, I think that was part of his game. Sort of obviously, you know, before we sort of had the rule changes, now I think it'd probably even be better.
100%. He's got nice skill as well, you know, yeah. which is obviously from an offensive point of view helps. And for the Dragons with their roster management, you know, they've got some really, really big decisions to make, because it appears from an outsider looking in that Ben Hunt, when he plays for the Dragons, hooker seems to be a spot he plays really well. Cameron McGuinness plays very, very well at lock for them. And lock is actually Jack DeBellin's position as well. So, you know, the Dragons and the coaching staff and the recruitment staff have got some big decisions to make there, because we see a story today about Cameron McGuinness, his preferred position being hooker, and whilst he's playing lock and very, very happy, is that where he wants to continue to play for the next 2 or 3 years? And, you know, I'm sure Cameron McGuinness is getting paid very, very well because he's an important player for the Dragons, but you can't have two lock forwards on big money.
Yeah, I was worried about that story where there was a piece of mischief Mr. from the agent saying this, because it seems that Cameron McGuinness hasn't said any words out loud anyway that he's unhappy playing at the 13. And Brad Fittler last week was on this show and mentioned him as some guy you look at in terms of origin as well, the way he's playing, because he still wants to be there.
There's so many clubs out there that need a good dummy half. I mean, you know, everyone needs a good lock as well. But you've got guys that play in the back row and they can sort of do a job for you there. But it's such a specialist role, dummy half. And there's some clubs out there, like if you look at the Bulldogs, for instance, if you look at even the Seagulls, some clubs that obviously they've got some...
The Tigers,
some,
if some Harry injuries. Grant goes.
Harry Grant. So, yeah, he's going to be a valued commodity if he does come onto the open market. And his manager will know that. And Brownie spoke about, you know, you can't have too much invested in two locks. Well, Ben Hunt's on $1 million. So you can't have him as your dummy half and another guy that sort of plays in that position as well on big money. It makes no sense at all for your cap.
Ben Hunt's position and Jack DeBellin will play a big part in whether Cameron McGuinness obviously stays at the Dragons. That's quite clear. Not even what the story's about, but from a pure roster management point of view, you say if Cameron McGuinness is on $500,000 and Jack DeBellin's reportedly getting offered $700,000, either way, that's a lot of money you can put in another position. And the Dragons have got numbers of areas where they need to improve to become a top four or top five team. So, you know, if Ben Hunt is going to stay at hooker, someone becomes vulnerable in your roster if you're going to manage your roster properly.
So you're saying they may have no choice really but to let McGuinness go?
Well,
if they want to keep DeBellin and Hunt's already on that much money.
Yeah, well,
you'd have to let him go.
And depend on, you know, do they think at the Dragons, do they think Ben Hunt's a long-term hooker, or is he just playing hooker in the short term to go and play with the young kid in the halves and play 5-8? I don't know what the Dragons are thinking there, but it's a decision that, when it's made, will have an effect on the player market, and there's some clubs out there who could either go for DeBellin or go for Hunt or go for McGuinness, whichever way you look at it. But they can't all play at the Dragons if Ben Hunt's going to play hooker.
And, of course, the truth of the matter is also that Jack DeBellin may play no football at all. That may happen down the track for him as well. We do know that he's the no-fault stand-down policy. That's where he is on charges. So is it weird that his value appears to have grown despite the fact that he isn't playing rugby league?
Well, He was a very well thought of player anyway, wasn't he? He was playing Origin in that good Origin side with, you know, Freddie. I think when Freddie introduced him, or Laurie, whichever, put him in the squad, and he did very well there. St George were playing well. I just think what it's done is it's just highlighted how good he is. We all knew he was a good player. Like, everyone knew he was a good player, but I'm not sure we all realised how good and how important he was, because obviously there's other players at the Dragons that haven't been quite as effective without him.
I think it's a good method, actually, because I think if I went off air, my value might increase.
You think so, Tony?
Would our performance drop without you, Tony?
Yeah. Aren't you eating at Rockpools tonight? I don't think you need a pay rise, Tony. I think you're doing fine. You're coming with a beautiful steak for lunch the other week, didn't you?
Oh, he did.
$100 steak.
He reheated the steak.
and now he's off to Rockpool.
Yeah, it's a tough life.
I love the support I get from my team. This is the Saturday Scrum.
The Triple M. Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Great to be with you on a Saturday afternoon when we want to know what really is going on in rugby league. We go here.
Read about it. Read about it. Read his mail.
Yes, and it's the great man himself, Brent Reed. G'day, buddy.
Hello, boys, girls, everyone.
Very, very well, thank you. Are you coaching football as we speak?
Oh, Tony, did you have to bring it up?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to bring up that the older boys just played? They only had 7 men at the end of the game.
Send offs?
They lost 8-3. No, half the kids are on holiday. They didn't show up.
Much like the Broncos.
Yeah, exactly.
No commitment.
Too hard?
Well, the kids who were there dug in. They had a go. 7-11. They only lost 8-3. Well, it might have been 9-3. I lost count. Anyway, I gave up as well.
It's going to be interesting to see what the questions Seabold's asked you in your press conference after the game. There, Reedy.
You still think you're the man for the job. You were there last night after that debacle. Yeah. We've spoken, obviously, about the Broncos and Anthony Seabold, but you were putting the questions to him, and that exact one, does he still think he's the man? What did you read from his answer and the body language? What was it like?
Well, it was obviously pretty raw for him, and at the time he just looked like a bloke who'd run out of answers. Now, obviously, he'll go home and he'll analyse it, he'll look at it, and maybe he'll come up with some answers, but it just felt like a bit of a... I mean, there's been some defining moments this year for them, hasn't there? You can't say this one felt, you know, any more different to any of the recent ones, but certainly he looked beaten down. He looked like, to me, he looked gone, frustrated, everything, every word you can think of. And I'm not sure where they go. Look, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about the contract and the 5-6 years, whatever it is, and it's ironclad. But, you know, they've got... it's hard to say they've got some decisions to make, Tone, because he's got so long left and we're 1.5 years into the deal, but they just don't seem to be playing for him.
No, there's certainly that. And did Branny, I mean, we've spoken about it, but there's a look in the eye, isn't there, of the coach?
Yeah, look, he's in a really tough situation at the moment because coaching, I suppose, is about experience, and Siebes is very young in these. He's sort of probably hasn't found himself in this situation before. So he had 1 year as a coach at South Sydney where he took over a roster which had been obviously very well coached by Madge Maguire. The nucleus of them had won a grand final. They played a lot of footy, so that was probably more of a role where the style of play was probably the biggest challenge for Siebes, which was he got that right, you know, getting them and probably pointing them in the right direction, where at the Broncos you've got a lot of young players who clearly haven't got their skills up to speed yet. They're very talented, but they don't know how to do the basic fundamentals of the game well, and that's a total different type of role that he's in now. And now that the pressure's on in a one-town team or a big club, you know, how you handle these situations, you only get good at it through experience. And
yeah.
And Siebes is obviously in a tough situation, which he's never found himself in before, and obviously didn't expect to find himself in neither. So, you know, does the club think he's the right person? Do they have to put someone with more experience around him? Do they go in another direction? They're all the things that, I suppose, boards and chairmen and that have to answer.
Well, yeah, the interesting one, it's a hard one for the officials there because they've given him the 5-year deal. So it's almost like if they make the decision to let Siebes go, you know, I almost think there has to be almost a sacrificial lamb at the high level of the club. Paul White's gone in 2-3 months anyway. His contract's up. So I wonder whether, you know, if that happens, Whitey goes as well, because it can't just be Seibold. They've gave him a 5-year deal, which is ironclad. There are despite the talk of out clauses, there aren't any out clauses in it. Not for team performance. So, you know, it's not as easy as just Siebes going for me. I think other people are going to go as well if they decide to take that path.
Yeah, in rides the cavalry in the shape of Ben Eichen then, if I believe what I read with Paul Kent's column. All right, what about the Bulldogs? They, of course, have made that decision in terms of Dean Pay. Is it how firm is it that Trent Barrett will be the man who takes over?
Well, I mean, the club's they were very tight-lipped about it late in the week. All the talk is the 3-year deal's basically done and dusted. It's just a matter of signing the contract. But, you know, it's an interesting situation because they would seem a fractured place at the board level at the moment. And, you know, there's whispers about board members talking to Wayne Bennett and board members going off in different directions, talking to, you know, Eddie Jones, people connected with Eddie Jones. So it's as done as I think it can be done when you're not stable at that level. So I'd still expect an announcement next week on Trent. You know, I'd expect an announcement next week perhaps on the two players who have been reinstated, Jade Ockenbore and Corey Herrera-Nera. I met with them on Friday. Look, Ockenbore, I think, will be back there. Corey's an interesting one because all the mail is that he's not keen to stay. I think they've got more meetings on Sunday, the Bulldogs board. It was put to me this morning, an interesting one might be if maybe he goes on loan for the rest of this year, just because they don't have a lot of time to sort of deal out and perhaps get someone in return for him, because he's quite a valuable player. He's got a few years left on his contract. Maybe the Bulldogs could look at sending him on loan somewhere. You know, there's an obvious clubs. The Warriors have got dispensation to loan players. They need players at the moment. They're interested in Corey Harawira-Nora. So that would make a bit of sense. I think we'll know a bit more early next week on that. Players want him back. Steve Georgiou wants him back. I'm not sure the board does.
Hey, Reedy, what about legally with his contract, right? So he was he sacked or stood down or whatever he was? Can he actually just leave, or do Canterbury actually have to give him permission with what's actually unfolded?
Oh, I think they've got to give him permission, Brannick. He was deregistered by the NRL, so he's effectively sacked, I suppose, by the NRL. Now, the appeals committee's reinstated that contract. I don't think that contract's back on foot. So I don't know that he can just walk away. The way I read it is, he would have to, like, Canterbury would have to release him from that contract. Now, I think they'll do that if push comes to shove. If he makes it clear he doesn't want to be there and they think it'll damage them too much, I think they'll want something in return, whether they want a transfer fee or a player from another club. I think they're within the rights to demand that, because I think he's got at least 2 years left on that contract. So there's some time left on that deal.
And Reed, what about that revised offer for Kieran Foran? And how was that taken or seen from his management? I think it was 70%, maybe next year, 80% of what he's actually, a reduction of 80% of what he's actually on this year. How was that received by Kieran?
Well, I imagine not well.
What would he attract in the market, though, Rudy? Would someone else come in and take him?
I don't know if he'd attract a lot more than that, to be honest, Gerds. I'm not sure what you guys think, but I'm not sure Foz, with his injury record in recent years, would attract a lot more than that. There was a bit of mail during the rounds, actually, this week that he wanted to leave anyway, even before that offer got put on the table. I'm not sure how true that is. I haven't spoken to him lately. And
would Manly be an option for him?
Well, I'm not sure they've got the salary cap room for him, Gerds. I think that would be I'm sure Des would take him back in a heartbeat, but I'm not sure they've got the cap room to be able to fit him in, even at 400,000. I think that would be their issue, but I'm sure Des would take him back because he's got a great relationship with him. And, you know, obviously I think Kieran still loves the joint, so I'm sure that may be an option at some point if he decides not to take up the offer and Manly can make the room.
Reedy, the Walker brothers, not a country and western outfit, but apparently the saviours in the coaching front for the Warriors, if I'm to believe what I read, although there's been a counter-argument. What's the story?
Yeah, this was a bit left field. This swap last night, and I think we're all a bit caught off guard by it, because I'd spoken to Cameron George during the week, and after Brownie cruelly knocked them back, he didn't have a, you know, they were still...
Hey, Reedy, I thought me and you were mates.
Anyway, I thought they were still a long way off making a decision. So, and, you know, I texted Cam when that story came out, and Cam said, mate, we're 2 or 3 months away from making a call. So, you know, they obviously interviewed the Walker brothers, but they're certainly not the only ones in the mix. I think there's a reasonably long short list that they're exploring, and they've got a way to go. So I'm not sure where that one came from.
And finally, mate, we've already got Brownie's take on it, but Jack DeBellin, the notion of him being fielding larger offers while sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah, look, and it's interesting because there were three clubs in the mix for him, the Dragons, the Warriors and the West Tigers. But as I understand it, the West Tigers perhaps aren't in the picture anymore because they basically, I think Jack wants the offers on the table in the next week or two. I think the Warriors one, if it's not there already, it'll arrive soon. And obviously the Dragon one is pretty close too. I don't think the Tigers were willing to put something on the table straight away. So it looks like it's a straight out shootout between those two clubs, the Warriors and the Dragons. And I mean, obviously Jack, if you talk to anyone around the Dragons, I'll tell you, Jack's in amazing shape, hasn't touched anyone or tackled anyone for a couple of years. You know, he looks like a Greek god, according to some people I've spoken to. So there's no doubt physically he's in amazing shape. He was a great player before he was basically thrown out of the game or frozen out of the game. Yep. Sort of bloke who can, you know, you look at the Dragons, he's the player they've missed really the past 18 months. I'm not sure what Brownie thinks, but that's what a lot of other coaches say. It all starts with Jack DeBellin when you play them. So he's a valuable commodity and his value's just going up and up and up.
Hey, tell me this, Reedy, has anyone from the Dragons or his management actually approached the new big boss who wasn't a part of him getting barred? Because with the COVID and courts being put off and all this type of stuff, I find it extremely unfair that a bloke can be stood down for 2 years now. Mm. If he's guilty, I've got no issue with it at all. Like anyone would, but if he gets stood down for another 12 months, if court gets dragged out and then he gets found innocent, his career's buggered because he's innocent. Yeah. Like surely old mate, he seems to be able to pull strings everywhere else, the big boss. Surely there must be some system we can come up with where if a bloke is innocent, he doesn't cost him his whole career.
It's interesting, isn't it, Brownie? Because, you know, I don't think anyone envisaged when this rule got brought in that Jack DeBellin would spend this long on the sidelines. I think everyone thought we would have a decision by now and it'd be well and truly over and he'd either be back playing or he'd be in jail. So I don't think anyone imagined it would take this long and the rule would have this impact. But Peter Vlandis was always a supporter of it. Andrew Abdur gave evidence in the federal court hearing against sort of Jack DeBellin, the rule being thrown out. So I don't think there's any mood amongst those two to eradicate the rule. Now, they might look at it. I think it probably deserves it, more
because of the circumstance of what happened to the whole world, basically. Yeah, that now that no one expected that he was going to be out for, it's going to be 2 years, and if it gets pushed into next year, it could possibly be 3 years. Then if the guy is innocent, it's an awful heavy price to pay if you are innocent, isn't it? That's all.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's set down at the end of the month where they'll make a decision on this latest legal fight where he's trying to get the charges thrown out on a technicality his legal team are. And I think if that comes back negative and it goes to court in November, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some moves made again to try and get Jack playing again this year. I'm not sure whether the NRL will listen to it or even consider it, but I've got no doubt if nothing happens on July 30 and it continues, someone will go to the NRL and ask the question again.
All right, Brent Reed, as ever, thanks so much for having a chat. Good luck. I hope you do manage to hang on to your coaching job there, despite all
I've
the pressure.
I've got my own game this Saturday, Tone. I made a comeback.
Really? You're playing?
Yeah. One game, one goal.
Oh, wow. What a hero. Well, I love it.
Shell
All right.
Peace, guys. Shell and peace.
There he is, Brent Reed, right here on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.